and that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blues on the rain, but I'm not afraid. This rover,
thank God it's Friday,
crossed over. If I never have a cent, I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street.
Welcome to the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the Afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris, your 20% host, giving 100% of the effort. And joined by Ian Geis, Tim Whelan, and Dan Strauss. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Yes, fabulous.
I just checked with our weather center. With the humidity added, it is 163 degrees outside today.
It is?
Yeah, 163. Set a new record today.
Oh.
Thank goodness it's 60 in here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Hang meat in here.
Here's the funny thing, which you as a listener don't know. Ian actually wears a coat in the studio because it's a little
chilly. I don't
need
it yet. Easily about 4:30-ish, the chill just drops.
But you know why that is? Because you've lost so much weight.
Ah, that's what it is.
You didn't have the blubber that I have keeping me warm all year round.
I still have some, so...
I have an extra shake if you want one. Try and gain some poundage.
You are really trying to push that shake, aren't you?
Well, they made a mistake, and they gave me two shakes at the place. My daughter and I went out to lunch today, mm-hmm. and they came out, and they said, oh, you already have a shake. Well, now you have two.
Wow. That's nice.
Great. Any other time, I'm good. I could drink milkshakes and malts. Malts are my favorite. Mm-hmm. But I could drink those, like... till the cows come home.
Yeah.
And
that's when you get the milk for the shake.
Yeah, I know. I know.
It sucks when you want a shake and the cows are in the field.
Yeah, and if I want a chocolate cow, I have chocolate shake, I need a brown cow.
I saw that this week.
I know.
That was one of those moments where you go, either America is full of the stupidest people in the world, or this meme has caught on like crazy because of social media. I think it's the latter. Coming up on the show today in about 20 minutes, our guest is a guy named Dave Weigel who's written a... But when you get him on the phone today, ask him if it's Weigel or Weigel.
Okay.
I don't want to pronounce. I'm 100% sure his first name is Dave.
Okay, good.
But he's written a book about the progressive rock era, which Ian's too young to have grown up in, but Tim and Dan and I all lived through and played on the radio, you know, groups like Yes and Pink Floyd and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and on and on and on. He's written a whole book about them.
Really?
Yeah, so we'll talk to him in about 20 minutes or so.
When music was really music.
When music was long enough for the DJ to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. But you know what? When you listen to, you're talking to kids that are playing music, playing guitar, and that my son is 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You talk to 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 35-year-olds, you're surprised at how much they listen to Led Zeppelin, how much they listen to bands from the 70s, because they said there's no jam bands anymore around like that.
There are, and that's a good point, Dan, because I would love to ask Dave when he's on, you know, what he thinks of this new group of jam bands that are out. And
okay.
I mean, it is, I thought the same thing. I sit there and I watch a bunch of my friends, and they constantly follow, they're going on this cruise, and it's all the old classic rock bands. And I'm to a point, I don't even care of seeing them anymore. I like the new wave of, I feel like I've progressed.
He writes in the book about going on a progressive rock cruise.
Really?
With Yes and some more obscure groups that were actually on there.
Years ago?
No, like a couple of years ago.
They've got one now. There's one coming up in either August or September, and I keep thinking, why do these people want to go see these guys now that they're 70, 75 years old? It just doesn't do anything for
me anymore.
Nostalgia. But to go watch these bands like String Cheese Incident, Fish, Widespread Panic, you go on the Jam On station on satellite, and that there is the music that we used to listen to in the next generation in that are out now, mm-hmm. but you just don't get airplay.
Dave Matthews Band is considered.
The Dave Matthews Band.
They're considered a jam band.
They're big on the jam band. Yeah. Just jam on channel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll get into all of that in about 20 minutes or so.
And Seventh Planet Band is a huge jam band.
Oh, that's Dan's band.
Yeah.
All right. You have a gig you want to play?
Tonight. Yeah, tonight.
I knew you didn't just drop it in casually.
Yeah, right. Tonight.
I knew there was a plug in here somewhere.
Tonight, we're playing at Brewski's in O'Fallon at 9 o'clock. Start at 9 to 1, and we have prizes and stuff we give away. We'll give out some Father's Day prizes and stuff.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. So speaking of things to give away today, when we play the Harris Challenge, we have a special. We're going to have only dads play today. Remind me in case I forget.
Oh, okay,
dads only Harris Challenge, and dads who win on the challenge, which will be at 5:15, are going to get a special gift from our friend Dave Kasperzik at Breezy Buddy. We've been giving away his battery-operated
pillow,
air-cooled pillows.
Yeah. Neck pillows, yeah.
Yeah, today he brought in the air-cooled lawn chairs.
Yes.
Which, yeah. Considering what the weather has been the last couple of weekends and today, wow, you sit down on one of these and it's impossible, biologically impossible, if you sit in one of these chairs to not make this sound. Oh,
I know.
It is. It's impossible.
It just feels so good. So we'll have those to give away a little bit later on. Did you guys talk at all about the Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor fight
deal? A little bit with Mike Evans yesterday.
Okay.
Did they fight already?
No, they're fighting in August. Okay. August 26th, I think, is the date.
Mike said that he thought that the guy...
Floyd Mayweather.
No, he thought Connor might have a chance to
Connor
win.
Was gonna
Connor's the UFC
yes,
guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know anything about this. I haven't followed boxing since Down Goes Frazier. That's how old I am. But I was reading this week that, according to Forbes magazine, Floyd Mayweather, the boxer, his net worth is over $340 million.
Oh, man.
$340 million. Let me just put that in perspective. If right now you saved money for the next 1,000 years, you would not have $340 million.
Right.
But that's how much he's worth. So why would a guy worth that much money want to ever go anywhere where he's going to get punched in the face again?
Right.
That's my question.
So I have an answer. Do you have the answer over
I do,
there?
I do. I read an article about this because I looked this up. I typed it into Google. Hmm. And it came back with an article from The Express, which is a British newspaper. And here's what it says. Despite earning an eye-watering amount of cash, Mayweather has faced a number of financial difficulties in recent years. Now, remember that word, difficulties. Because it's not like something that was imposed on him by outside forces. This is all of his own doing. For instance, he's defaulted on a number of loans. He owes the IRS nearly $6.1 million in back taxes. His financial advisor said in February that Floyd Mayweather spends $75 million a year.
Wow.
Which reminds me of that Johnny Depp story we told on the air a couple of months ago, remember?
Yes.
When his lawyers and financial people, they came out, he's suing them, and they said, oh, you're going to sue us? Well, we're going to make public that you spend like $2 million a day. You know, you bought a private island. I mean, these incredibly wealthy people who can't manage their money. 50 Cent, the rapper, I call him Fitty.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
He was in business with Floyd Mayweather, and he said, quote, it's fight, get the money, spend the money, fight. That's Floyd's life. If he stops fighting, then the money machine stops, and the cash flow stops, and his income stops, and his financial world comes to a grinding halt.
How old is he?
I would guess maybe right under 40.
Yeah, I was going to say 36, 37.
Wow.
Somewhere in there. Now, you could blame this on the lack of a financial education in America, but when you get really wealthy, there are lots of people who come along and are there to give you the financial advice you need. Mm. Unfortunately, many of them are giving you financial advice that lines their pockets.
Right, yeah. Hey, Floyd, I need some money. Can I borrow $2 million?
Well, it's a lot easier to talk them into some risky investment that you're involved in than to say to them, you know, if you're careful with your money, you and your family, for several generations, will never need money again.
Yeah.
You have $340 million, but...
Well, the entourage, too. The, you know, the people like that, they walk around with 20 guys all the time on the payroll.
Right.
And if you've ever seen anything he puts on social media, Instagram, Twitter, whatever.
I haven't.
It's his planes lined up with his, you know, two or three Bugattis and every expensive car, you know, in every color you can imagine.
Okay, so that's the first $100 million.
Yes. Well, I've always,
you still have a couple $100 million left.
And I've always been curious, like boxers and big wrestlers, guys that are built.
Yeah.
They have bodyguards. Yes. Why do they need bodyguards?
Well, because there are idiots who are going to come up and challenge them all the time.
I know.
People used to make fun of Sylvester Stallone after Rocky.
Oh, yeah.
And Rocky 2 and Rocky 3. Mm-hmm. He had to have bodyguards. Now, he's only like 5'5".
Yeah, he's a tiny guy.
He's like Tom Cruise height.
Yeah.
But he had to have bodyguards because there would be idiots who would go, "Hey, Rocky, help the, let me see if I can take you on." And they would hit him.
Hey, you guys know I'm just an actor. I just ran up those steps.
So you know the same thing is happening to these guys, you know, or the UFC champs. Or
right.
I'm sure it happened to Ronda Rousey, who's the only female UFC champ I've ever heard of. Now, the other part of this is, when you said you think you know why he fights, was the money the answer?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. You heard what they're getting for this one?
I hear he's getting $100 million.
I think both of them are getting $100 million apiece.
Wow.
But since Conor is still under contract with the UFC, I think Dana White, who is the president of UFC, I think they're going to get a cut, like at least probably $20 million maybe.
Well,
we'll go to
how's
the
he going
to
pay the mortgage? He only makes $80 million.
And if we decided to go out and fight someone else in radio, we'd get $100 apiece.
We wouldn't even get that.
No,
yeah, probably.
Yeah.
We'd have to pay to fight.
Yeah, just start GoFundMe accounts. Now, here's the other part of this. I think it's possible that when you're a Floyd Mayweather or a Conor McGregor or, you know, name any famous fighter, I think there might be a part of them that likes A, being hit, or B, hitting other people. I think that's got to be a part of the psyche, because you've trained and learned how to do that so well that you probably get a little excited by it.
I think more so for Conor. Floyd Mayweather's boxing strategy is to not get hit. He's the one that is constantly dodging, and he's not an overly powerful puncher. Usually most of his fights go, you know, to a decision, and he always, you know, I think the last four or five fights he's done, they've gone the full amount of rounds, and he always comes on top, but just because he connects with the most percentage of punches and avoids, you know, that's he's more of the pretty you know, Sugar Ray Leonard kind of.
Oh, really?
Yes. Not a straightforward, which is what Conor McGregor's strategy is.
Like Tyson.
Welcome back to the Jim
Tyson.
Lampley and Larry Merchant show.
Yeah,
that's what just happened there. I'm Jim Lampley, and Ian is Larry Merchant getting into the analysis of the boxers.
Right.
I'm not boxing so much, but I do enjoy watching UFC from time to time, especially Conor McGregor. He's a very electric performer, mm-hmm. and especially going out on all the talk shows too, he's a very entertaining person to watch.
Yeah.
So he's been one of, you know, UFC's bigger stars in the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years.
You know, I wrote a little bit about this on my site a couple of days ago, and somebody who didn't read the full article but saw my link on Twitter or Facebook said, "I'd get in the ring for that kind of money and let them punch the crap out of me."
Yeah.
Which reminds me of the same thing we went through when Mike Tyson was the champion. If you weren't around at that time, a Mike Tyson fight didn't last long enough for you to get popcorn.
Right, yeah. Right.
Like 97 seconds and the fight would be over.
That
didn't make it out of round
one. The Spinks fight. Was it one round?
I don't even
think it was a full round.
But, I mean, he had multiple fights that were over before.
They just threw him a lot of fast knockouts. They knew it was going to happen.
And I remember at that time, guys would call up my radio show and say, "Oh, I'd get in the ring and let him punch me for a couple of minutes for that kind of money."
I wouldn't. He'd kill me.
Of course you wouldn't.
You would have been in a coma for your life.
He was like Clubber Lang in
that's right.
In Rocky.
Yes.
When he would, it was like, holy crap. You could feel the punches coming through the screen.
Here's how hard he would hit you. Afterwards, the doctor would come to you and say, "Do you know where you are?" And you would go, "Thursday."
Yeah. I think I'm Sylvester Stallone.
I mean, your gray matter gets turned into oatmeal by guys hitting you in the head that hard. And I say that as a guy who has not been hit since I was 7 or 8 years old.
Same here.
When I was young, there was a neighborhood bully who used to pick on me a lot. And it stopped when I was 7 or 8 years old. I don't remember why.
Your brother?
No. No, he was smaller than me.
Oh.
And younger by 4 years.
Ah.
But it's now 50 years later for me. I haven't been hit or hit anybody in a half a century. And I mentioned this on the air years ago, and a guy called up and said, "You're lying." I said, "What are you talking
lying.
About? How would you know if I was lying? You don't live my life, so you wouldn't know if that was the truth or not." And he said, "Well, because it's impossible to go that long without getting hit or getting into a fight." And
what?
you could tell from the way this guy talked, he got into fights all the time.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. He has two or three beers, and all of a sudden, it's a brawl.
Exactly. Yeah. So, well, I had to explain to him, I don't get into fights because, A, I don't go to places where fights are likely to break out. I haven't had a drink in 23 and a half years, so I don't go to bars. And if I'm anywhere where that sort of thing does happen, I'm not fighting you. There's nothing you can say to me that will make me want, "Oh, what did you say?"
I was at a bar one time and a fight broke out. And this guy, it was just like, this guy was sitting and he was kind of sitting next to me. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, boom, this guy comes up. I couldn't get further away. I just got up and walked away.
That's me. I will, you know what? Whatever you say is the problem, I agree with you and I'm out of here. I'm not going to stand around. I'm not going to get hit. Now, that being said, here's the B part. I will protect my wife and my daughter.
Of course.
And I would protect myself if somebody were to come after me and I couldn't get out of there. Of course I would. But I'm not going to be in one of those situations where I'm walking through a crowd and somebody bumps into me or I bump into somebody else and they go, "Hey, what the hell's wrong with you?"
Right. Yeah.
What are you talking about? "You just bumped into me," or get out of my way. It's like, you know, "Sir, whatever you say, I'm fine. I'm leaving. I'm 100% poultry at this point."
And sometimes,
I am done.
Sometimes people like that, they want to fight.
Well, that's what that guy who called me that day would.
Yeah. I just offer him a vanilla shake.
Well, you happen to have one handy at all times.
Yes.
So that's good. So I'm not fighting you. Even if I had Conor McGregor or Floyd Mayweather money, I'm not fighting you. I don't understand.
Even in hockey now, we still play hockey, and we're like 50, 60-year-old guys out there playing hockey. If anybody gets mad at each other, if somebody gets mad, and then we have all this equipment on, we have cages on our face and everything, and it's like, it's stupid. And then we look like, if we do start pawing at each other, we look like a couple of little girls in the playground.
Is there anything sadder than a middle-aged hockey goon?
Oh, yeah. I know.
Yeah. You're approaching 60, and you're throwing down the gloves, and you want to get that guy.
Yeah.
No, I know what Dan would do in that situation. Skate off the ice.
Yeah, I'd offer him a shake. Give him a vanilla shake.
That's all there is to it. We'll be back with more of the trenchant boxing and fighting analysis of Larry Merchant Geis over here a little bit later, but we got a break now, and we'll come back and talk about the progressive rock era with a guy who wrote the book, literally wrote the book on the subject, Dave Weigel, coming up next here on the Big 550 KTRS.
Meet me.
Hey, we're going to get a check on traffic, and here's the guy to give it to you, Tim Weiland.
Well, I just got a report of an accident on southbound Highway 270 at Ladue. I don't see it on any of the cameras, but beware if you go through the area. Eastbound Highway 40 is really jammed up from Mason up through Highway 270. Eastbound 44, you're at Jefferson to 55, 55 up to the Poplar, and eastbound 70 jams up pretty well from the Museo Veterans Bridge down to the Poplar Street Bridge. And this traffic report brought to you by Staples. When it's time for some office upgrades, turn to Staples. Staples has everything to furnish your office at great prices right now. Get special deals for even more savings in-store or on Staples.com. Staples, it's pro time. I'm Tim Weiland from the Jack Smith Ford Lincoln of Collinsville Traffic Desk.
Hello!
John, you're in the Big 550 KTRS. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning.
On some area talk stations, you hear guys in New York, Florida, or L.A. pontificating on their shows. But good luck trying to call in and have a conversation with them. Here at Live and Local KTRS, we are live and we are local.
Just pick up your telephone and dial.
That means local St. Louisans talk to other St. Louisans about things happening in St. Louis while we work, play, and live together in St. Louis. And we like phone calls.
Hi, John and Jennifer. This is Jamie. I love the show.
Jim, you're on the Big 550 KTRS. Good morning.
1-888-550-KTRS. That's 1-888-550-5877. You listen to us. We listen to you. We're St. Louis's biggest conversation. The Big 550 KTRS.
Message and data rates may apply.
Oh my gosh, that's Frank Thomas.
No.
Yes, that's him. Go ahead. Excuse me, are you Frank Thomas?
Yes, I am.
I bet you get recognized a lot.
I was a pretty good ball player.
You were?
Some people thought so.
Sorry, we recognize you from those Nugenix commercials.
Oh yeah? That's great.
So does Nugenix really work?
Oh yeah, I really can feel the difference. My workouts are better, and I feel a lot more energetic.
I wish my husband would use Nugenix.
It's so easy to get started. All you have to do is send one simple text.
Text the word JUDGE to 42424 for a complimentary bottle of award-winning Nugenix, the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC. Its unique man-boosting formula is powered by Testofen, a patented key ingredient clinically researched to help a man feel stronger, leaner, more energetic, and more passionate.
And you're going to like the difference, too.
Text JUDGE to 42424 for a complimentary bottle of Nugenix. Samples are not available in stores. Text JUDGE to 42424.
It's hot.
You said it.
And getting hotter at Suburban Leisure Center. No, we're not just talking about the temperature outside. We're talking about the hot, sizzling prices inside Suburban Leisure Center.
What does that mean for you?
Well, head to Suburban Leisure Center to take advantage of tremendous savings on new patio sets up to 50% off. Suburban Leisure Center has a great selection of everything you'd need to have yourself a mini resort in your yard with patio furniture from all the top brands, plus umbrellas and just about everything you'd need that will make you go on the patio, and a tremendous savings up to 50% off. And because you can actually sit on the furniture and feel the quality at Suburban Leisure Center, it's a lot better than ordering on the internet and hoping that it looks like what you saw online.
Yeah, this doesn't look like it did in the picture.
With Suburban Leisure Center's unmatched selection and prices, you'll get what you need for less, up to 50% off. Suburban Leisure Center is on Olive, just a mile west of 141. Better merchandise at better prices at Suburban Leisure Center. Online at suburbanleisurecenter.com.
Need a new CPAP? Then we need you. We're CPAP.com, and we recently overstocked the world's best CPAP machines. Top-of-the-line devices from brands like ResMed and Philips Respironics. Call now and get one of these overstocked CPAPs for a fraction of the price. We'll even give you free next-day air shipping. Call 1-800-900-6135. The best part? No insurance needed. We're giving out these CPAPs at prices so low, they'll cost less than your copay and deductible through insurance. CPAP.com has shipped over a million orders and has the world's largest selection of CPAPs and accessories. With no retail overhead or costly middlemen, we're the best way to get comfortable, effective sleep apnea equipment at incredibly low prices. Again, CPAP.com has overstocked premium CPAPs. Call now to get a ResMed or Philips Respironics machine for a fraction of the price with free next-day air shipping. Call 1-800-900-6135. Hurry. When these overstocked CPAPs are gone, they're really gone. That's 1-800-900-6135.
Yes, we will.
Yes, we will. Answer all of your questions.
Yes, we will.
Yes, we will compare our prices to the market to make sure that you get the biggest savings.
Right now at Jack Schmidt Ford in Collinsville, get $3,000 cash back on a new 2017 Ford Fusion Edge or Explorer on top of their already great savings.
Yes, we will work hard to earn your business.
The other guys bought into the deal. You didn't like the way they made you feel. Now you're headed to the home of Yes, We Will. Jack Schmidt Ford, we get out of Collinsville.
Hi, John Grayson here. Inviting you to join me Friday, June 23rd at the AD Lift Truck Barbecue Fundraiser, all to benefit our wounded veterans. The proceeds are going to Project Healing Waters and Focus Marines Foundation. The barbecue is from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., and I'll be broadcasting live from 10 till 1. It's all for a good cause, helping our wounded veterans who are there for us. It's the AD Lift Truck Barbecue Fundraiser, benefiting our wounded veterans. Friday, June 23rd from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at 5434 Natural Bridge. See you there.
Hi, David Fox here, proud founder of two St. Louis companies I started over 23 years ago, Carpet Masters and Hardwood Rescue. If you have hardwood floors that need to be refinished or repaired, look us up online at hardwoodrescue.com. We're proud members of the BBB and maintain an A-plus rating. Allow us to make your floors look brand new again at truly affordable prices. At Hardwood Rescue, we offer free estimates and evaluations. We are ready when you are at hardwoodrescue.com.
The Financial Symphony is a show that blends the worlds of music and finance together in one harmonious package. It features your local financial maestro, Jerry Means.
A lot of advisors out there are mainly giving accumulation advice or looking at the growth through your working years. You really need to take a look at, is your advisor giving you advice on preservation and distribution?
That's the Financial Symphony with Jerry Means every Sunday morning at 10 on the Big 550 KTRS.
My daughter was young and she was learning to play the piano. Her teacher would play classical pieces for her that eventually she would learn to play. And she'd play the whole thing for her and say, okay, now we're going to break it down and we're going to play those. And when my daughter told me that, I played her this song, Nut Rocker, from the Pictures in an Exhibition album by Emerson, Lake & Palmer. And I said, I'll be really impressed when you can play the keyboards like this. Of course, I was setting the bar a little bit high with my daughter, asking her to emulate Keith Emerson, one of the greatest keyboardists in rock history, and one of the people who became famous during what's known in rock and roll as the progressive rock era. That would essentially be from the late 60s until about the early 80s, mostly through the 1970s, when bands like ELP and Yes and Pink Floyd and King Crimson and many others were creating a new rock and roll form, and it became known as prog rock or progressive rock. Well, now Dave Weigel has written a book about that era, and it's called The Show That Never Ends, The Rise and Fall of Prog Rock, and he joins us now. Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Welcome to the show. Was Emerson, Lake & Palmer the first? Do they get the credit, or was it Yes, or which band would be the one that launched progressive rock?
There are quibbles about this. In the book, I argue that the first progressive song, I think you can credit to Procol Harum with A Whiter Shade of Pale. The first album, I would say, King Crimson and the Court of the Crimson King, really defined what the music would sound like.
Mm-hmm.
And Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, Lake of Emerson, Lake, Palmer is the lead singer in King Crimson. So he takes a lot of what he learns from there. ELP become, I think, the preeminent progressive band, not just in terms of a giant fan base, giant concerts, but in what you were just playing. They are the most ready and giddy to incorporate classical music and rethink it through rock.
Was that a theme of progressive rock, the classical connection?
Oh, absolutely it was. So it was a largely English movement at first. It spread worldwide, especially progressive metal, which is kind of the last iteration of the music, is all over Europe, all over America. But a lot of the bands that formed this sound and kind of formed the ethos were from London and from kind of the English countryside and had similar training. Some of them were self-taught on rock instruments, but pretty similar set of influences, including English church music, Anglican church music, I should say, and classical composers, and it, kind of coming out of a media environment where it was easy to hear classical music, actually you had to go out and search for rock. So everyone had the same influence, and that's what I think made it interesting, that unlike punk explosion about 10 years later, where there's not a ton of diversity in between the sounds of the various bands, there's a lot of diversity here. I think the commonality with most progressive groups is this organ anchoring everything, often with a lot of virtuoso talent.
Yeah, the organ and of course the Moog synthesizer. Would progressive rock exist if Robert Moog had not invented the synthesizer?
Not the way it became. So the Mellotron, actually, which is a much more simple electronic, actually kind of an analog instrument, if anyone's heard Strawberry Fields Forever, they've heard the Mellotron. That was what some of the first bands used. The Hammond organ, same deal, but they were more limited. The Moog synthesizer, as Emerson uses it, becomes this, not just a linchpin of the music, the ability to kind of blend these space-age sounds into what they're doing, but on you were playing Nut Rocker, I mean, he uses the Moog to play Aaron Copland, to play, this is actually more than one of Aaron Copland's songs, and sometimes gets feedback from the composers, if they're alive, on what they think they're doing to the music, and it wouldn't have sounded like that. I mean, there is psychedelia birthed a lot of progressive rock, but the experimentation of this sort of music was a lot more electronic for a lot of bands, and the Moog was a huge part of that.
Who was a better progressive rock keyboard player, Keith Emerson or Rick Wakeman?
That's one of the great questions I hear people tussle over. I went to festivals, I went on a progressive rock cruise, I talked to a bunch of lots and lots of fans, and that is a hard answer question. Emerson was more of an innovator. Wakeman, various stages, is probably more of a virtuoso in what he wants to do. But Emerson also was a little bit more ambitious in terms of trying to write real classical music. When the band made it, he was trying to write serious pieces to be played by orchestras.
Did you say
Wakeman thought the what they were all part of was good, but worth occasionally, in the British term, taking the piss out of.
Did you say you went on a progressive rock cruise?
I did. I did drop that very briefly. I went on what is the Cruise to the Edge, which is only one of at least two progressive rock cruises I'm aware of. And I didn't want to cliched cruise story. I was fascinated by the particular type of fan that would do such a thing. Close to 3,000 people on this boat in the Caribbean for 5 days, hobnobbing with fans. And they widened the definition of progressive rock in order to have this. But Yes and Marillion were the big features on the Cruise of the Edge. There were a couple metal bands that worked their way in, like Queensryche. And then there were these new young bands from Japan and Sweden that were... I think revealed how much you could get away with under the label of progressive, how much you could play with the music, and how much you could surprise people without using typical rock chords and rock song structures, and especially length. I mean, just long violin solos that were kind of ricocheting across the cruise ship.
Wow. I'm just trying to imagine what that is. Okay, everybody, we're going to have dinner, and then we're going to hear two songs by Yes. That'll be 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yes and Marillion both had several nights to their own, and then a couple interviews in different parts of the boat. But most of them, I mean, John Wetton, who has unfortunately passed away, as Emerson, John Wetton, Tony Levin, some of the real icons of this music, just walking around the boat and hobnobbing with fans, and there was a relationship there that I didn't fully appreciate everyone thrown together on this boat.
Was this before Chris Squire passed away?
It was before he did. Yeah, he was. He of the members of Yes, he and the new lead singer, still lead singer John Davison, were probably the most game to go out and then mingle with people. Before he passed away, so this is 2014. He passed away a year and change after that.
Yeah,
you know that Yes got finally inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just a couple of months ago.
Yes.
What took so long?
There's a literal conspiracy, not in the wild-eyed sense. There is actually a resistance among members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame board to bring progressive rock in. So it took a very long time for Genesis. It took a long time for Rush, and then Yes, there was actually a lobbying campaign by people with experience in political campaigns and pressure organizations, just to break this logjam and get them in. It did take a long time. It's, as I write in the book, and kind of a reason why I wrote the book, this has been so written out of rock history, and to the extent is part of rock history, is as sort of an interregnum, a moment that was very regrettable that punk came along and saved us from.
Yeah.
And so that idea of what this music was pretty well ensconced in the sort of people who decide who's in that rock hall.
You know, this year the other inductees included Joan Baez and Tupac Shakur. It's funny to me that those can come in. Right, absolutely. Those fit the definition of rock. But Yes, nah.
Well, yeah, no, NWA got in before Yes. And I'm not sure how many more progressive bands will get in compared to a lot of big generic rock groups. It's a complicated relationship that critics have with this music now. They didn't always. And one thing I found in researching the book, and that this process involved reading thousands and thousands of magazines, fanzines, watching all the interviews from the time. It took a while for critics to turn on this. And in the early 1970s, there's a lot more critical respect for Emerson, Lake, and Palmer than there is for Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin seen as a fun but derivative band ripping off blues tracks, whereas ELP, King Crimson, even the way they're covered by the press, it reminds me of the way that someone like Kanye West is covered now as not just a cultural force, but if we're trying to get every detail of this album because we know the band's going to do something new and exciting.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, Dave, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album, and of course, the Beatles have re-released it for the 900th time.
Yeah.
Every article talked about it being the first rock concept album. But as I pointed out on the air, it wasn't really a concept album through and through. It had the Sgt. Pepper thing at the beginning, and it had it towards the end before Day in the Life. But in between, there's no concept linking them together. I always thought of the first rock concept album as being the Moody Blues' Days of Future Past. Would you agree?
I'll agree, and we're talking about a space of months here, but I think the reason that sometimes denied credit is that the label suggested that the Moody Blues use this orchestration and build an album around that, whereas I guess people want to give the Beatles more credit for innovating what they did on Sgt. Pepper. But I'm happy to say that. I think that's the place it gets in the book. That's music that... Maybe the label did urge them to use the orchestration, but it wasn't necessarily predictable they would do such interesting things with it. I mean, there's a lot of kind of strings piled onto pop music. Yeah, but the Moody Blues write a series of songs around the passage of a day. There we go. They did invent something. They got a little bit of credit at a time, and credit I think that's been taken over the course of 40 years.
Yeah, I mean, it flows through the day, and you have great songs like Tuesday Afternoon and, of course, Nights in White Satin, which I did not realize until I read your book, was literally about satin sheets.
Yeah. No, that was something. Talking to these musicians, I was pleased with how not pompous they were. Now, if they were pompous, they're usually in on the pomposity. They're kind of being big about the music for a point. Just as often, or sometimes more often, they were just having fun with it. And they'd ask for the interpretation of a lyric, and it was just, it not together the way any kind of pop lyric wants together. The idea that these bands were obsessed with sci-fi and fairies and stuff was just kind of belied by how much fun they were having.
Yeah.
And, with the occasional exception, like, John Anderson and Yes are pretty, John Anderson himself is pretty into writing big mystical Eastern religious lyrics.
Yeah.
But the rest of the band just kind of nods their heads and plays.
Is it true that Procol Harum's Whiter Shade of Pale was inspired by a cigar commercial?
It was. Well, there is a Air on the G String was sampled. The Bach composition was used in the cigar commercial, and it was what the band used for inspiration to write the song. And there's a fight, by the way, a long legal fight over... who deserves credit. And Michael Brooker kind of won this for writing this, or pointing out in court that the song was really not that interesting without this organ part that he very proudly cribbed from Bach, but he cribbed it from it from the commercial. And that's one thing I've seen through a lot of music I've written about, is that you don't need to necessarily get it from the wellspring. You get inspiration trickled down from all kinds of sources. And that was, the progressive musicians were just so open-minded about what you could get the inspiration from.
I was a big fan of a band called Renaissance, which combined classical and choral music with rock and roll. And the reason I loved it so much was the voice of their lead singer, a woman by the name of Annie Haslam, whose voice on Prologue and Ocean Gypsy and Carpet of the Sun, she's just amazing. I never heard her do anything after that. And it also makes me think, where are the other women of the progressive rock era? Were there any?
Not a ton. There's Sonia Christina from Curved Air. There are female vocals that sometimes get brought in on albums. Not a lot of progressive female musicians in the band, and that's not atypical. It's ironic because the Nice, Keith Emerson's band before Emerson Lake and Palmer, begins as a backup for a soul singer, a female soul singer. So they kind of took from that and made their own movement. But no, that is a bit of a blind spot in this sort of rock history. I think it's also, you could say, a reason why it's gotten a little bit less attention. Punk has at least enough female icons, but I think people can tell that story and they feel like they're being more even-handed. I have seen more female musicians in modern progressive music, not metal, but the ones I was talking about, I've seen progressive female artists who grew up on some of this stuff, on Marillion, and for whatever reason, I've see, at Marillion shows, there's more gender balance than I'm used to from a lot of other bands. But you're right. The classic 70s stuff was very male, just like heavy metal, just like a lot of punk.
Here in St. Louis, Dave, we have a Pink Floyd cover band called El Monstero. As far as I know, they are the most popular cover band of any band anywhere. I mean, they play at an outdoor amphitheater here, and they get 10,000 people coming and playing. They'll do a week of shows during Thanksgiving, and they'll sell out every one. It's a huge deal when El Monstero is in concert, and their concerts are a very faithful recreation of what a Pink Floyd concert would be, running through pretty much all of their albums. Does that exist for other progressive rock bands that you know of?
Yeah, there's the Musical Box, which is a very good Quebec-based Genesis cover band. And Genesis have actually cited them as a reason why it doesn't make sense for them to do a real reunion tour, because this band has learned every single move down to Peter Gabriel's makeup of the really progressive 1970 to 1974 iteration of Genesis, before Steve Hackett leaves the band, before Peter Gabriel leaves the band.
You mean when they stopped being a progressive rock band and became a pop band under Phil Collins?
Yeah, which took a while, but this is the Supper Is Ready, I Know What I Like in Your Wardrobe, that era of the group, this incredibly faithful act. And there's actually, they're a hybrid. There's a band called Three Friends that's members of Gentle Giant playing on, sort of paying tribute to their music and continuing this pretty unique sound, this Renaissance influence rock sound, but occasionally with different members. Same thing with Soft Machine. There is a Soft Machine legacy that maybe has one member of what the band originally was and keeps going. But there was the 21st Schizoid Band was a tribute to King Crimson, whose singer was so well-liked, well-respected by Robert Fripp, that when he reunited King Crimson 3 years ago, he hired him on. He'd already started collaborating with him on some solo projects and then hired him on to be a new singer of the band.
I was just wondering. We were talking about how a lot of the folks are following the bands that are older now and stuff like that. Are you into any of the new jam bands like String Cheese Incident or Fish or Widespread? Dave Matthews. Do you hear influences? I mean, I go to String Cheese Incident and I hear influences from so many of the earlier bands. That are you? Do you notice that, or do you go check them out at all?
Yeah, I got more interested in some of those bands and researching this book, but they've never quite sung out as much to me. I just think there's a lot of interesting technique being displayed, but not as much innovation in the music. I mean, when I listen to Fish, I kind of know. I can't predict exactly where the songs will go melodically, but the track they're running around is pretty small. Where the track Yes is running around is 100 miles long and floating in space somewhere.
The other thing that was key to that era of progressive rock was the album art. I mean, back in the days of vinyl, you would buy the album, you would fold it out, you would use it to separate the twigs and stems from your weed, and then you would smoke that while you listened to this and stared at these Roger Dean pictures, right?
Completely, and that's something that has come up in other conversations I had about the book. When people ask, why did this fade? I think how long should any genre last? It did last about its natural existence, but in the early 1970s, there is a bit less competition for your entertainment time and dollar, and progressive music was just so encompassing. It was a combination of art that you could sit back and really luxuriate in and look over.
Yep.
And it was the concert, this giant happening, often with a tailgate, usually with like joints getting lit up, with sound concussing all around you, a stage show with a lot of effort put into it. As opposed to, I go to lots of concerts now, but a lot of them have people in T-shirts kind of standing on stage, thrown together without a lot of thought.
Yeah.
You would hear with video components and dancers and light shows, et cetera. So they always put on more of a show than a lot of comparable rock, and the album art was a big part of it.
Yeah, that album art doesn't matter that much in the era of the digital download.
Right.
You know,
there's
no art to look at all. Dave Weigel's book is called The Show That Never Ends, The Rise and Fall of Prog Rock. If you lived through that era and you liked this music, this is a great read for you. you can pick it up now. I appreciate your time today, Dave. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.
Meet me.
And we're going to check traffic right now with Tim Weiland. Okay, Dan, it just looks like normal volume. It's backing things up now. Eastbound Highway 270 from Missouri Bottom around the bend through New Florissant. Southbound 170, Ladue down through 40. Westbound 40s, Kings Highway through McCausland. But once you get out towards St. Charles County, of course, Friday, people want to get out of town. You're slowing now from Winghaven out through Highway 70. And downtown, you had an accident on Eastbound Highway 70 at Packer Avenue, which is just over the Museal Veterans Bridge. And this traffic report brought to you by Staples. Staples is your office away from your office with everything you need, print, scan, or fax. Access files from a USB, email, or the cloud, and use self-serve machines to get back to business. Staples, it's bro time. I'm Tim Weiland from the Jack Schmidt Ford Lincoln of Collinsville Traffic Desk.
KTRS is the original social media.
What? Wait a minute. Who wrote this? How can that be? Oh, thank you. Is this the definition of social media? Okay. It says, a form of electronic communication through which users create online communities to share information, ideas, personal messages, and other content. Yeah, that's us. KTRS is your personality-driven electronic communication news feed where listeners like you are a part of the KTRS community. You can share information, ideas, comment, like, and react on the KTRS Facebook page or by texting us at 84126 or by calling us at 1-888-550-KTRS. That's 1-888-550-5877. You listen to us, we listen to you. On air, on the phone, and on social media. The Big 550 KTRS.
If you're putting off getting hearing aids because you can't afford them, you're not alone. Just like you, 75% of people who need hearing aids don't get them because they can't afford them. And no one should have to pay thousands of dollars just to hear. That's why we've created the MD Hearing Aid, a revolutionary medical-grade hearing aid that virtually everyone can afford. And you can start your 45-day in-home trial today by calling 1-800-400-1065. MD Hearing Aid is doctor-designed, FDA-registered, and specially tested by audiologists. MD Hearing Aid gives you high-quality hearing aids without the hassle of doctor's visits and expensive and time-consuming fitting appointments, a saving of more than 80% off the average price of a traditional hearing aid. Don't miss out on this affordable hearing solution. Call now to get your 45-day in-home trial of MD Hearing Aid and enjoy hearing clearly again. Plus, when you call now, you'll get free batteries for a year. Call 1-800-400-1065. That's 1-800-400-1065.
Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber's phenomenon, Jesus Christ Superstar, at the Muni now through the 18th. Sponsored by Edward Jones. Tickets available at Muni.org or at the Muni box office.
St. Louis Closet Company is celebrating 26 organized years in business. Call St. Louis Closet Company today at 314-781-9000 to schedule your free in-home estimate.
ADT, protecting what matters most for over 140 years, is more than a sign in your yard. It's 24/7 monitoring for your...